Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In many countries owe us a tremendous amount of money from many years back where they're delinquent, as far as I'm concerned, because the United States has had to pay for them. So if you go back 10 or 20 years, you'll just add it all up. It's massive amounts of money is owed. The United States has paid and stepped up like nobody. This has gone on for decades, by the way. This has gone on for many presidents, but no other president brought it up like I bring it up.
Jordana and Paul here. And you know, Paul, he's not wrong. He's not wrong.
No, he's not. And today he challenged our NATO allies to spend more on defense spending, on mutual defense spending. He wants all these countries to spend at least 4% of their gross domestic product, the GDP. We don't even spend that. The United States spends about 3.6% of GDP. That was last year. But listen to this. Only 8 out of 29 NATO allies are on track to meet even 2%. So he's not wrong.
He's not
when he says that the United States spends a disproportionate share on defending Europe. But we also have a vested interest in obviously defending Europe from Russia.
In fact, so I was going to let me play a little more of the Trump sound because he had a lot of interesting things to say that were somewhat inflammatory. And this was all just at the photo op before the summit began.
I think it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So we're protecting Germany, we're protecting France, we're protecting all of these countries. And then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia. So we're supposed to protect you against Russia, but they're paying billions of dollars to Russia. And I think that's very inappropriate. And the former chancellor of Germany is the head of the pipeline company that's supplying the gas. Ultimately, Germany will have almost 70% of their country controlled by Russia with natural gas. So you tell me, is that appropriate? I mean, I've been complaining about this from the time I got in. It should have never been allowed to have happened. But Germany is totally controlled by Russia.
Well, Angela Merkel did not like that statement, that Germany is totally controlled by Russia. She fired back a couple of hours later, saying she lived in East Germany under Soviet control, and things are different now. She writes, or she says, I'm very happy today that we are united in freedom, the Federal Republic of Germany, because we can say that we make our independent policies and make independent choices. It's very good, especially for the people in Eastern Germany.
I don't understand the whole control issue. I mean, the president used the word control.
It was the wrong word.
They are dependent on Russia for natural gas, although they're trying to ramp up renewables, wind and solar. But I don't understand the whole control thing.
The president was written a letter by, they just signed their country's names. let's see, Madeleine Albright, Lloyd Axworthy from Canada, Eric Dike from Belgium, Lambertino Dini from Italy. They all wrote the president a letter ahead of the NATO summit. They are the group of foreign ministers who meet regularly to discuss threats in international security and prosperity. They write in the letter, we are gravely concerned about the deteriorating relationship between the United States and its Western allies. We're writing you now ahead of NATO and your meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin to underscore the need to reverse this dangerous trend. On the line with us is Mary Curtin. Mary is a diplomat in residence at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. She's joining us now to talk NATO. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mary.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So what do you make of all of this? What is your gut visceral reaction to what happened today in Europe, as specifically at the NATO convention?
My gut reaction is a combination of really great concern about how our president is treating not just individually our allies, but how he is treating the concept of an alliance. And I guess concern and fear over where this is all heading.
How so? Just because he uses strong language? Because a lot of people would agree that they need to pay up their 2% or whatever it is. I mean, does he make good points? And is he just abrasive? Is that why you're concerned?
I think that if it were just abrasiveness, then I would be concerned, or say maybe that wouldn't be the style that I like. But I think now this is the second summit in which the G7 summit and now this, in which the president seems to think that, or seems to view the idea of these relationships as purely transactional, that we pay a certain amount and we give them security, so they should give us this. And the idea of NATO isn't just sort of a transactional put money in the pot, pay for defense. It's also about a relationship that has always had its differences. NATO has had a lot of trouble over the years, a lot of internal, you know, differences over how things should be done. But the idea at its foundation is really a very profoundly political idea that this group of democracies are all stronger together rather than when each of them looks to their own defense on their own. And so it's not just about defense spending. It's about looking at the political situation across the Atlantic, you know, the United States, Canada, and in Europe, and seeking to reduce the conflicts among those countries. You remember World War II was among Western European countries, to reduce those conflicts, to build a more stable system, and as part of that, to also have a military. And many U.S. presidents have pressured Europe to increase their spending. The agreement that President Obama really forced in 2014 was this agreement we're talking about now, in which all of the states committed to spend 2%. And so that's not a new issue. It's the attacking of the very idea. So saying, you know, NATO's a bad deal or things like that have me very worried.
Mary, I mean, my take on this, for what it's worth, and it may not be worth much, is that Trump voters did not elect a statesman. They did not elect a diplomat. They elected a flamethrower, somebody who would go in, shake things up, right perceived wrongs. The perception, and it may not be the reality, but the perception among many people is that Europe has not been paying its fair share for mutual defense. What would you say to those people?
Well, I guess that I would say to those people that I would ask them to think about whether or not, if it were a family, for example, which NATO is sort of a family, does flame throwing solve problems, or does it just make them worse? Does it create fractures in relationships that maybe will be very difficult, if not impossible, to improve? So, like I said, this is not the first administration that has pressured the NATO allies to increase their defense spending, especially since September 11th, when, you know, and then after the Russian seizing of Crimea. So there are issues that are there. There's also something that I think I heard you refer to, which is that the United States is a global superpower. And so our spending on defense is not about, you know, providing defense just for Europe. It's about our projection as a superpower around the globe. Mm-hmm. And our defense spending outweighs the defense spending of something like the next, I don't know, 10, 15 countries, including Russia and China put together.
Right.
And so it doesn't really make a lot of sense. You can't really just compare why we spend so much on defense to why countries in Europe spend so much less, because most of them are not projecting their power internationally. And one more thing on Germany, for many decades, it was the other countries that were not comfortable with Germany spending too much on defense, because Germany still, you know, there is that history of Germany.
There's some baggage
war.
There, mm-hmm. Yes.
And, yep.
And so there is a certain level of discomfort with the idea of a rapid rearming or building of the German military. And so their strength, if there ever were to be another war, might actually be in other areas. You know, their railroad system, the strength of their economy. There's other things that go into an alliance than simply military hardware.
Some of the NATO leaders reminded us that all of NATO's members benefit from participation in the alliance, but the U.S. is the only country for whom the provision for collective defense had been invoked, which happened after September 11th. And now for more than 15 years, NATO has led military and training missions in Afghanistan at the behest of the United States.
That's right. And, you know, over the years when I worked for the State Department, for example, I spent a year at the Army War College in the early 2000s, and there were many NATO allied officers who were there as part of the effort to make sure that there's training, you know, across our military so that they speak the same language militarily. And many of the officers who were there had themselves served in either Iraq or Afghanistan. And then again, I was in Poland for 4 years. And, you know, the Poles are one of the countries that do spend 2%. Because they are and have been for a long time very concerned about Russia, and they feel very strongly that they need to think about themselves, and so they do spend that. But also, they volunteered to send their troops to the most difficult parts of Afghanistan in particular because they wanted to demonstrate that they were a good ally. And there are a lot of examples out there that get lost when I think there's a lot of inflammatory rhetoric about, you know, they need to pay up or, you know, giving one thing that I worry about the rhetoric with regard to how American citizens perceive this is that it doesn't describe the reality. So simply saying that they take too much from us or they don't pay up or they don't do anything from us doesn't accurately describe. And so then American citizens who are thinking about this don't have the information that they need in order to make their own judgment about the summit and what's happening.
Mary, my father was almost shot. He was almost executed by Russians as they came in to what became East Germany during the end of World War II. So, you know, this strikes a chord with me, and I certainly don't argue the need for NATO. But what would you say to listeners who say, look, we got a lot of problems here at home. We should be using that money right here in the United States. Why should the United States continue to be the policeman for the entire world? I mean, is it promoting democracy, promoting freedom, keeping the world safe as we can? What would you say to those people?
So, you know, I personally think that it would be a really good thing for our country to have a good debate about what we spend on the military as a proportion of our budget, apart from how it relates to NATO or anything else. And the decisions, and this has been a very bipartisan, we have not seen too many decreases in our defense spending, except maybe right at the end of the Vietnam War and then the end of the Cold War over time. And a lot of that has to do, I think a lot of the rhetoric is about promoting democracy, but the reality is about projecting our power as a superpower and creating the kind of security that, you know, our leadership over decades and across parties has thought was important for our security. That, you know, if you project out and you create greater security in the world, then that's better for us. And then it creates a secure environment in which we can live. But I do think that, personally, I think that it would be a good idea to you know, to have that discussion beyond just political slogans. But, you know, the president asked for a significant increase in defense spending rather than a decrease. And so we haven't really had that conversation yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mary Curtin, diplomat in residence at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Mary, thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. It's always great to join you on the show. Thanks.
You know, Paul, you ask an interesting question about the United States being the police of the world. Anders Fogh Rasmussen, he's the former NATO Secretary General. He's also from Denmark. He was recently interviewed, and I caught his interview, and he had some great, interesting comments about why the U.S. should be the policeman of the world. And I'd like to ask our listeners what they think about that.
Okay.
Our phone number is 651-989-9226. You will hear how the former NATO Secretary General from Denmark answers the question about America and should we be the policeman of the world. And we'll take your calls when we get back from the break on CCO. Jordana and Paul, Susan at the helm, talking about NATO. And the question came up, should America be the policeman of the world? This question was actually asked in an interview to the former NATO Secretary General, Anders Fogh Rasmussen. He's from Denmark. His answer was enlightening. And then we'll be taking your calls on should America be the policeman of the world?
European allies and Canada should not increase defense spending to please the United States.
And that's the wrong soundbite, so I'm going to play you the actual soundbite where he answers the proper question.
The world needs a policeman to restore international law and order. The world is on fire. Wherever you look, you have conflicts. You need a world policeman, and I don't see any other reliable candidate than the United States. But now you are lacking American global leadership, and this is why autocrats like Putin, Xi Jinping, Assad, Kim Jong-un, they have a more easy game to play than before. So the fact is, when the U.S. and the democratic world retreats, they will leave behind a vacuum, and that vacuum will be filled by the bad guys.
Can't disagree with that. The world has always been on fire. Just ask Billy Joel. Right? We didn't start the fire, Jordana.
It's pretty compelling. And yeah. I'm not saying I want us to be the policeman of the world, but boy, he makes a compelling case.
But when we have a $20+ trillion deficit, can we continue to fund this? I agree.
Well, is it funds or is it morality? Is it being united? Is it saying, hey, we'll have your back? Is it different than offering up funds? I don't know that he's saying we have to fund everybody's wars, but I think he's saying we have to be united and strong against the Vladimir Putins of the world, the Assads of the world, the, you know, Kim Jong-uns of the world. That's what he's saying. We do want to hear what right. you think. Our number is 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. Marty had been waiting on the line and so graciously waiting through the break. Marty, you want to join in?
Hey, Marty.
Yes. There were three things that came to my mind. The first is we are the world's policemen for benevolent or social responsibility reasons. I guess the same reason you expect someone that's very wealthy to give a little more to charitable organizations or things like that. The second reason would be, I think if we have a lot to lose, and I think the things that happened on 9/11 that began or started out of Afghanistan is just one indication that something could crop up almost anywhere. We're not immune because we have oceans on either side of us anymore. And with as much to lose as we have, we have to step up and protect ourselves. And the third reason is because the same reason that Danish gentleman said, if we don't, somebody else will, and it scares the hell out of me regarding who might that might be.
That's right.
I have a couple of ideas, and I don't know that I would like the way that they would police the world.
Yeah, do we want China? Do we want China specifically?
That's right.
To police the world. And I don't disagree with your premise, and I think you said it very eloquently, Marty, what happens over there has a way of blowing back on the United States. I mean, we saw that with 9/11, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. He makes a good point. Marty, thanks for the call. Great call.
Thank you, Marty.
Our number is 651-989-9226. You can jump in on NATO also, but if you want to jump in on, is this America's responsibility? Yeah, we say policemen of the world. We don't mean actually policing and having a force in every country, but being the moral leaders and, if needed, the military leaders.
And what's the alternative?
That's
is
right.
the alternative the United Nations? Do we really want the UN being that global police force?
I don't.
I mean, we have a long, rich history. We have a tradition in the United States of stepping up and filling that role. Can we afford to continue that?
Let's find out from Tony. Tony's in Eau Claire. Tony, thanks for the call, sir.
Hello.
Hey,
hi,
Tony.
Hi. With a much larger GDP and the fact that we pay a higher percentage than anyone else, so even if we were at their percentages, we'd be paying a lot more. And then you hear things like Germany making a secret agreement with Russia to get natural gas, which one of the allied countries could easily supply them. I just, I don't understand how we're getting hit so hard on the percentage. Plus, you know, they're still, quote, not being part of the team, so to speak.
I'm with you.
What do you think the solution is, Tony?
I think that they need to buy from one of the allied countries that are in the NATO agreement and not from one of the countries that we're supposedly protecting Europe from, which is kind of a old school thought anyway, because if you think about it, Germany was one of those countries at one time that we were being that we were protecting Europe from, or at least East Germany, and also Russia. And now Germany's economy is so much larger than Russia's economy. I mean, Russia is not the threat that they used to be. Granted, they still have a lot of nuclear warheads and all, but it's just not the same environment that it was, you know, 40 years ago.
What I don't understand. But what I don't understand, Tony, and maybe you can help me with this, is are any of the NATO allies in a position to provide natural gas at a price? And it's all about lowest costs, right? I mean,
sure. I don't know what the U.S. costs would be versus Russia,
right.
But I do know that the U.S. has hundreds of years of supply of natural gas. And so there's where there's a will, there's a way. You know, why would Germany allow itself to be controlled to the point of 70% of their energy usage from the natural gas they get from
Well, before you go on, Tony, there is a little fact-checking, because we know sometimes you can't always trust everything that comes out of our president's mouth. So the New York Times did a little fact-checking on that, and it says Germany is the world's largest importer of natural gas.
Natural gas, right.
Mm-hmm. This is according to the Federal Institute of Geosciences and Natural Resources. Now, the country with the largest natural gas resources is Russia. They have the largest natural gas resources. Nearly half of the natural gas flowing through the pipelines into Germany last year came from Russia. Like the rest of the European Union, Germany relies on Russian exports as its main supply of gas and crude oil. Natural gas is the fuel where Germany's proportion of imports from Russia is highest, 40%. It's about 40% for crude oil and 30% of coal. So Mr. Trump said Germany will be getting 60 to 70% of their energy from Russia. In fact, the total amount of its energy needs that Germany gets from any foreign source, and even as its gas market is highly diversified, most of the rest of the gas it imports comes from the Netherlands and Norway. So it does get a large portion, not 70%. It does get a large portion from Germany. It also gets from Netherlands and Norway. A new branch of Russia's Nord Stream pipeline mentioned by Mr. Trump might push the proportion of Germany's energy that comes from there a little higher, but not to the figure that he gave. So let's keep in mind where we're getting our facts from and not restate them. Germany is not controlled by Russia. It will never be controlled by Russia, as the German chancellor made it clear. Their government is not that of Russia. But yes, they do get some natural gas resources from them.
What, 40%?
About.
Okay. All right. Hey, Tony and Eau Claire, thanks for tuning in, and thank you for your comments, sir. Tomorrow, Jura, we're going to try to have somebody on from the Cato Institute, have more of a conservative perspective on NATO and where things stand. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked about my dad, and real quick, 30-second explanation. At the end of World War II, the Russians were sweeping into Germany where my dad grew up. Mm-hmm. My dad was 15. He was not a soldier. He was hiding in a boat, and they came in. They lined up my family, including my grandfather and my dad, and they were ready to execute them. They thought they were snipers. They thought they were guerrillas. And my grandfather, in a stroke of wisdom, said, look, we have vodka, we have eggs, we have veal. Let us cook you dinner. You can kill us after dinner. You can shoot us after dinner. And the Russians were like, okay. They got them drunk. By the end of the night, the Russians hugged them and said, we will not kill you, but if you don't leave with what you can carry, you will be dead tomorrow. So, you know, and my dad has these stories. So there is no love lost with the Russians. No trust there.
Unbelievable
so,
story.
So anyway, for what that's worth.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Kind of puts your troubles into perspective. You can kill us after dinner.
It does. He's an amazing man, your father.
He's got some great stories. He's 88, going strong.
He is really
Thanks,
amazing.
Dad.
I'm glad he shares them because it's important to hear them.
Yep.
Paul and Jordana here. We will see you at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Have a beautiful night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.